Welcome back to Counting to Five, a podcast about the United States Supreme Court. In this episode, I'm going to preview a case called Dada v. United States, which is going to be argued on Wednesday, February 21st, 2018. Now, Dada v. United States is a case about the remedy for a criminal defendant who has been subject to an overbroad wiretap order. Now, often when we're talking about searches like a wiretap and whether certain evidence should be excluded from a criminal trial, we're talking about the Fourth Amendment of the United States, which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. But here, instead, this is a statutory case. This is a case about a specific statute. And we're referring to Title III of the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968. Now, this is a statute that sets down certain requirements for wiretaps. And so here are the facts on this particular case. In 2012, a grand jury in the District of Kansas indicted 43 people in a marijuana distribution conspiracy. Those 43 people included the petitioners in this case, Los Dada and Roosevelt Dada, both of whom were convicted on multiple counts and sentenced to 15 plus years each in prison. Now, the Dadas, they prior to their trial, they had challenged the legality of wiretaps on 11 cell phone lines. So these were wiretaps obtained. The DEA was working in concert with some local law enforcement, and they obtained wiretap orders on 11 cell phone numbers. And the Dadas, they argued that the cell phone evidence needed to be suppressed and it could not be introduced at trial. Now here's where the argument comes from. The orders at issue that were issued by this this court in Kansas, in the District of Kansas, a federal court in Kansas, the order said, and this is a quote, in the event that the target telephones are transported outside the territorial jurisdiction of the court, interception may take place in any other jurisdiction within the United States. So in the event that they're transported outside the territorial jurisdiction of the court, meaning outside of Kansas, then interception may take place in any other jurisdiction within the United States. Okay, so that's what the orders said here. Now, Title III of the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968, that it provides for applications for wiretaps. It provides the standards for applying to a federal judge to get an order allowing for a wiretap. But it specifically limits these wiretap orders to, quote, within the territorial jurisdiction of the court in which the judge is sitting. So again, that would be, in this case, within the state of Kansas. There's an exception. There's broader wiretapping interception that's allowed outside of the jurisdiction for what's referred to as, quote, mobile interception devices. And we'll come back to that in a little later, because that does come into this case. But that generally is that refers to something like a portable bug that's placed on someone to record their conversations, which was not an issue here. But we will come back to that. But in any case, there's this limit to orders being within the territorial jurisdiction of the court. Yet we had orders that said interception may take place in any other jurisdiction if the phone travels outside. There's another provision of Title III of this Act, which provides for the suppression of certain intercepted communications. And it has a couple different grounds for suppressing these communications. And one of them is if the order of authorization or approval under which it was intercepted is insufficient on its face. And so that's what's at issue here, a specific statutory provision that says if the order of authorization or approval was insufficient on its face, then it must be suppressed, and it's mandatory suppression the way that the statute is written. Now, what actually happened in this particular case was, of the 11 phones that the government got orders on, 10 of the phones were for people that resided in Kansas, and the communications on those phones were intercepted from what's called a wire room, just a room where in cooperation with the telecommunications providers, the government can plug in and record and intercept and record cell phone communications. It was a wire room that was located in Kansas, and it was Kansas residents communicating on their phones. The 11th phone was a conspirator, alleged conspirator who lived in California, and the communications on that 11th phone were intercepted from another wire room in Missouri. But the government agreed, after these challenges were brought, not to use any of the intercepts from outside of Kansas. So that is not to use any of the intercepts from the Missouri wire room on the, from this California, alleged, co-conspirator, but only to introduce evidence from the 10 Kansas phones. And those were the only ones that were introduced at trial were communications from the Kansas, phone intercepts. The lower court ruled that, the court could go ahead and use the evidence from these. The court said, it looked at the statute and said that these orders were in fact insufficient on their face, due to the overbroad territorial reach. That was just on the face of the orders. They were insufficient. But the court said that this didn't really impact the core concerns of the statute because the government wasn't actually, introducing any interceptions that were from out of state. So the court allowed this in anyway. And that's been appealed, and that's what's up at the Supreme Court right now. So let me get into the arguments that are being made on either side. So the Dadas, the defendants, the convicted defendants here, they say that that this is clear that this was these orders were insufficient on the face of the orders, and the statute says that entitles them to suppress the communications, and that's basically that. That's what it says. There's an out-of-state authorization. That's insufficient because it's not what's provided for under the statute. And there's nothing in the suppression provision that depends on what's actually used at trial, whether that violates what would be allowed in the state. It's just about the facial sufficiency of the order itself. And that's that order was facially insufficient. Therefore, anything collected under the authority of that order should be kept out. They say the statute is clear and just there's no room in there for court made exceptions. It says if it's collected under the authority of this insufficient statute, then or insufficient order, then it's suppressed and that's the end of it. They also argue just on a policy level that at the time when this statute was enacted, Congress was very concerned about privacy protection. There'd been scandals about wiretaps and there'd been a lot of public interest and it was kind of a huge issue at the time. And the Congress was concerned not just about what was being introduced in court, but about privacy protection more generally. And they wanted to prevent the government from overreaching and listening into conversations that they should not be listening into, even if those conversations weren't ultimately introduced in court. And so the exclusion remedy, the suppression remedy that they wrote right into the law, was considered necessary to properly restrain law enforcement, and to keep law enforcement in check by knowing that if they went too far, they would be blocked from using anything they'd collected in court. And they also argued that the territorial limitation was important because it prevented what's referred to as forum shopping. And that's the idea that the government could kind of look for go from district to district and try and find a judge who's more sympathetic to give them an order they could then use anywhere in the country. And there's a lot of state to state variation in how common wiretaps are and how often they're issued. So this would allow the government to go around and just find a friendly judge in a particular location and send all their wiretap applications through there and get these nationwide orders. The territorial limitation was supposed to confine that and just make the government have to get their wiretap in the location where it's to be used. They point out that as is maybe apparent if you think about the fact that this act was passed in 1968. This is an old statute. This is a time where no one was anticipating cell phones that everyone would be carrying, traveling freely through different jurisdictions on the same phone number. They weren't anticipating these centralized network hubs where you could go to just one room and with cooperation of the cell phone providers could just plug in and get any communications you wanted, even from, you know, different states and different areas in the country. This was designed in an area where wiretaps literally meant tying into a copper phone wire to record conversations. But they say that you know, to the extent that this needs updating, that's a job for Congress, not for the court to kind of carve out exceptions just because they feel like the statute isn't in sync with modern realities. But they also say that the technology actually creates greater privacy concerns and greater reason the government has much more capability to wiretap much more broadly. And that means that these privacy concerns that motivated this should be taken seriously and kind of enforced to the letter. So what does the United States say? Well, they come back and they have a number of arguments. First of all, they argue against the idea that this order was insufficient on its face in the first place. The order they concede is overbroad. It envisions a collection outside of the District of Kansas, which is the only scope that's allowed under the Act. But that overbreadth is not the same as being insufficient. They say sufficiency refers to the information and evidence in a application for a wiretap that's needed to support that wiretap, and that evidence was here. This may be overbroad, but it's not insufficient. They say if that territorial language had been left off, if the order had just ended after it authorized the interception of these phone calls without saying, and if they go out of state, you can collect out of state, it would have been fine. Adding that territorial language doesn't affect the sufficiency. It just made it too broad. So they say it doesn't actually fall into this prong. But then as a fallback, they say, well, even if this does mean it's insufficient, first of all, this type of the issue here in this case doesn't implicate the limits that Congress was intending to impose. What really happened is you had a mistaken interpretation of the statute by a lower court. It appears that the lower court believed that cell phones fit under the mobile interception device exception, that exception for mobile bugs. And while the U.S. doesn't agree with that interpretation, it agrees that cell phones don't fit under that. They say that the state court just thought it fit under that. But that the fact that exception exists shows that the collection of out-of-state calls isn't flatly excluded. The court just made a minor error of statutory interpretation and wasn't kind of contravening the basic limits imposed by Congress. And also they argue against the form shopping argument that the DATAs make. They say that actually today form shopping is very easy. The government can use these listening posts, these wire rooms and listening posts in a particular district where they want to get a wiretap, even if they're intercepting calls that come from some other place elsewhere. So form shopping is actually easy now and has nothing to do with the limits that the DATAs argue for won't do anything to stop that problem. And then finally, they argue that the error, if there was this overbreadth error, should be severable. And what they mean by that is that you should be able to kind of divide the order and only invalidate the part of that order that's mistaken. So the order has authorization for in-state wiretaps on these phones, and then also authorization, the improper authorization of out-of-state wiretaps. And the court says, well, you can look at this order and say, well, the part of the order, the first part of the order where it just authorizes these wiretaps in state, is there's nothing wrong with that. That's perfectly fine. It's only this out-of-state provision that's invalid. So the court should basically just sever and just exclude that latter part. Just say, well, the out-of-state portion, that's the invalid part of the order. And it's only communications that flow from that which would be implicated, and no communications like that were introduced at trial, so it's not even an issue here. So they say that the language in the statute that requires suppression of certain communications, it focuses on the order that's authorizing a specific communication. Now here, so the focus is on the specific communications being excluded and what authorization there was for what order was authorizing those. And the specific communications that were introduced here, the part of the order that authorized them was perfectly fine. That was not the part that's objected to. So that's basically arguments here. So, you know, it seems like this is going to come down to the court really parsing the language of this statute and trying to decide, you know, what does it mean for something to be insufficient Can you, under the language requiring suppression under a particular order, is there room in there to read in some sort of severance, being able to kind of divide one particular order and treat a valid part of that order separately from an invalid part of that order? So, this case again will be argued on February 21st, and a decision should come down by the end of June. And that's it for this episode. Please subscribe to Counting to Five on YouTube or your audio podcast app of choice. For timely coverage of the latest developments of the court, please check out Counting to Five's weekly YouTube live streams, where you can ask your own questions in the live chat. And these live streams, we're currently broadcasting them every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, but you can always check the Counting to Five YouTube channel to see when the next scheduled live stream will be happening. And I'm always looking for feedback. Please leave a comment or send me email at mike@countingtofive.com. And thank you for listening. This has been Counting to Five.